Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual see. Taryn's update for Survivor.
To our Survivor Update podcast. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and today, this week, I am here with a fantastic guest. This is a Survivor Winners at War, and so what I've done is I've got a winner of Big Brother Canada with me. It's Kevin Martin. How you doing, Kevin?
Hey, dude, I'm great, man. I'm really, really good. I was looking forward to this all day. I am a lifelong Survivor fan, and we were talking a little bit before the show started. This season's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. This is the peak of Survivor, and it almost seems like whether Survivor goes on to the 50s, the 60s, it's going to be hard to top this. So I'm just living in the moment. I'm really trying to enjoy this season. Life is good, and I'm excited to talk about it with you.
Yeah, it really is nuts. It's like watching the season. It's like when you were in school and adults always told you, like, these are the best years of your life. Cherish them.
Yep.
I'm like, this is as good as it probably is ever going to get. Like, when are we ever going to, like, I think I mentioned this last week. This is probably the best cast of reality TV history.
Yep. Yeah. And it's all come together, and this has been building, and I'm a Survivor fan, but boy, we've been through some rough times. We just had season 39. That was not fun. This is the ultimate palate cleanser in terms of excitement. This is incredible. I have met, and I mean, I'm not a Survivor alumni, but I have met a chunk of these people through poker. Shocking that, you know, I was pretty pleased to see that the poker lines took such a massive piece of airtime these first couple episodes, and that'll be interesting to talk about. But I'm good friends with Adam Klein. He's involved in this season, and he's heavily involved in this episode specifically, episode number 3. So yeah, this is truly fan fiction, because I mean, there's casual people in my life who are gotten back into this season. They haven't watched since, you know, season 4 or something. And they said, hey, this sounds like a big deal. This really is the peak. I remember I was in high school when Heroes versus Villains are on, and that's had some hype, of course. This is the ultimate. And we really do have to enjoy these years. You know, it's not perfect. Like, come on, Edge of Extinction. We're taking up a little bit too much time, but it's okay. I can live with it. We're in an amazing time. You know, this is very exciting.
Yeah, you know, I've never wanted longer episodes more than this season. Anytime I get content just from the island, from the tribes, just whether it's strategy or just them interacting, I'm just like, this is incredible. But then we get to like Extinction or an Advantage, yep. And even the challenges have been pretty good, but even challenges to me are like, okay, like this is fine. But when we get to the meat of it, I'm like, more, just more of this, please.
Man, it's so crazy. It's just like, it is, the challenges are okay. I'm all right. But in terms of what we're watching, the Edge of Extinction content is, it's fine. It's fine. But what is hurting the Edge of Extinction content is that it's being compared to the Social Strategy, which is gold this season. That content where people are socially strategizing is the best Survivor we've seen in years. And so Edge of Extinction in comparison, like, I respect what they're doing out there, and you know, but the giant escape room that is Edge of Extinction, it just takes away precious minutes. I'm like, what is getting left on the edited floor that we could be seeing? You know, we could really use 2 hour episodes a week. You know, there's just not enough time.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good problem to have, I guess, that we just want more, but
yeah, I feel bad even bringing up that issue, because this season has been so fulfilling and so satisfying so far. But I mean, we're Survivor fans. We're going to want the best for the show for as long as we can. Like, Big Brother is a love of mine as well, but it's Survivor is way higher in terms of, as a fan, I enjoy that show much, much more.
There you go. All right. So let's get into the episode.
Let's do this.
because there's a lot to break down here. And so the more we go throughout the season, the more this sort of like in-depth analysis is kind of like paying off, I think, because I'm noticing some connections, like reading into what we've seen before and what we're seeing now. It's probably, you know, reading more into it than the, like, it's not like the editors are always crafting this like highly detailed story, but I do think that there are some connections that we can make to previous episodes that are interesting. So, For sure. So we open up here on Sele.
The Blue Tribe.
I'm almost there.
S-E-L-E. Sele.
Yeah, right?
Close enough. I'm a big Survivor fan, but I never remember the tribe names. I think of it in colors. Like, there's very few tribe names that I could... I feel like that's just, you know, people don't really like, but Sele is the Blue Tribe.
Yep. Sele and Dakal. I'm normally a color person, but when you watch every episode two times and take excruciating notes, you eventually do get to learn the names of the tribes.
that's how good this season is. I'm a big fan, and every other season I give one episode one watch. Mm-hmm. That's all I get. But this, I watched the episode before, listen to a podcast, go to bed, I wake up and I watch the episode again while I'm eating breakfast, because it's just been that good. So I got some extensive notes here as well about this episode. Beautiful opening shot. Interesting scene. Rob is tickling Adam with a leaf or something. Wake up, honey. It was kind of a cute moment. And then we get into this scene where Adam is ready to play. He's ready to step up to the plate. He's over the old school players having control, specifically Rob, Parvati, and Ethan. And we get these confessionals where Adam's a good friend of mine. But he comes off a little arrogant. He comes off not great at the start of the show in terms of Boston Rob should maybe play more like me. And when you're getting that kind of airtime in the confessionals, it's always risky. I was like, oh no, Adam's definitely going to be in the forefront of this episode and just hold on. Yeah, and that was a fun opening scene for sure.
It was. Yeah. I mean, yeah, Adam is telling us the old schoolers have been running the show. And this does seem like a departure from the previous episodes where there wasn't a lot of concern about the old schoolers from anybody but Ben until we saw Danny basically out them. And so the question kind of became like, how impactful is this going to be now that she's outed the old schoolers as a thing? We saw Ethan in particular really be able to be in on a lot of the conversations that were happening throughout the tribe, despite the fact that he was a quote unquote old schooler. And I think that right away we're being shown that this actually has done a lot of damage, that this is now Adam is now saying old schoolers are not only a thing, but they're running the show. And this is no good. Yeah. He says, this is not Redemption Island. This is Winners at War. And Rob needs to adapt and play more like me.
Yeah. That whole confessional was great. But the last sentence is Rob should play more like me. I was like, oh no, that's not good that made the cut, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's really, really interesting. It's interesting kind of tying back to last episode. So Danny was an old schooler, but she seemed very volatile. She wasn't very included, and they said, okay, enough of Danny. Let's let her go. And sure enough, obviously jumping to this episode, it really showed that the old school, that three really lost control. You know, this episode, they really had very little power. It really was out of their hands. Boston Rob tried. He tried frantically. But it was pretty clear from the get-go, the power in the Sele tribe really resides in the new players, which is Jeremy, Michelle, Denise, Adam, and the fifth is Ben. Those are the people. Shout out to Ben, by the way. How is Ben included in every single conversation? Ben's a guy who doesn't get a lot of love in the Survivor community. He's had a great three episodes, strategically, socially. You know, Ben is not the most eloquent. He's not going to spill these beautiful sentences about social strategy, but he's in the mix. He seems to be included in a lot of the conversations. So he's coming out of the gate really, really hot. And I'm very happy for him because he was probably the most disliked winner in terms of their win and how people remembered it because of the fire making challenge. And that was very controversial, but so yeah, out of the gate, it seems like the old schoolers are in a bit of trouble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, Adam also tells us, and this is the line that was given from the preview in the previous episode, that it's time to take a shot at the big dogs. Mm-hmm. This seems to be a theme with Adam so far, that Adam talked a lot about how in the previous episode, especially how it's all about taking the right risks at the right time, and that he knows he will not win this game if he doesn't take those risks. And mm-hmm. so I think the episode is kind of asking us the question, is this the right time for Adam to take this risk? And so he's going to pitch to Denise that Parvati should go, and that they should maintain their relationships with Rob and Ethan even after they do that. And he tells Denise, he says, Rob trusts me a lot, which I was surprised by. I don't know why he thinks that, but we heard Rob talk about in previous episodes. He gave us a confessional. Look, this game is all about relationships. It's all about relationships. And he's told us that he feels secure in those relationships. And at the time I was kind of like, I get that, Rob, but, at the same time, like, you know, you are such a big target. Yeah. I don't know if relationships can save you. And I don't know if you should feel secure in those relationships. However, what we've seen happen here is that apparently those relationships are very solid. People like Adam are saying, I trust Rob. I trust that Rob trusts me, which is even better than just trusting Rob, right?
Yeah.
For Rob, at least. And we're seeing even people like Jeremy, people like Michelle, all over the tribe. Everyone is saying, we want to keep Rob in the game. We just need to weaken him. The only person that doesn't want Rob around is actually Ben, at least mm-hmm. for now. Ben tells us he can't work with Rob anymore. He's just, he takes charge. He's an alpha male, and he doesn't want him here. But Michelle and Adam feel that Parvati is more dangerous, Michelle says, we'll be able to pull Robin after we take out Parvati. So Rob is clearly doing something right with his relationships.
Yes. He's the ultimate meat shield for Jeremy, right? He has the, what's been shown, that the cast saw that giant head from season 39 before the game started. That was pretty clear. And it surprised me that Ben really was the one that was adamant of, like, let's get rid of Rob. Ben was really over Boston Rob at this point. We saw in episode one, Ben was a victim of the Boston Rob magic, and maybe, you know, Ben just doesn't want to blah, 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 spill all the information anymore. That was an incredible scene. But you're right. It seemed like the majority wanted to attack that trio of Ethan, Rob, and Parvati. Most of the energy was going at Parvati, with the exception of Ben wanting to go after Boston Rob. But it seems clear, there's eight people in the tribe. It really seems clear that there's five new schoolers, three old schoolers. And as we see, I think it's before even commercial break, we see the scene where Adam goes to Ethan, correct? I think that was before the first commercial break.
Yes.
Adam goes to Ethan.
Yep.
And this is like the call, the game plan. You know, you have a timeout. The coach has the clipboard. They write up the game plan. The game plan was correct. He had the right idea. The execution really struggled. As soon as Adam went to Ethan, I asked the question of, why was this necessary? Why does Ethan need to know of this plan? I could kind of get behind it, you know, if they have a good relationship, but it isn't a very off, like, Ethan is an old school player, and it seems like the old schoolers really do have that loyalty in their blood a little bit more. The new school game is more fluid. It seems like the voting blocks, that's not how the old schoolers seem to play. They really lock in with relationships. So Adam's read to go to Ethan seemed suspect. I could understand it. I could get behind it later in the episode when he goes to Rob. That was mind blowing. We're going to talk a lot about that conversation, how bad that went. The game plan was good. The execution from Adam started to fall apart right at the start of the episode too. This all happened in the first commercial break. It was so much content right away. It was an incredible episode.
Yeah. And he even tells us later that this is something that he did on his original season.
Yep.
And it didn't always work for him on his original season, but sometimes it did. And so I think he felt that, that this was the time. He tells Ethan, he tells us that he knows this. People will think this is stupid. I know, but trust me on this one. I need Ethan in my corner if we take out Parvati. And you, yes, you're right. I think that we can see what he's going for here. He's trying to take control of the tribe. It's the method here that is a little bit questionable. And Ethan is going to tell us that was a silly mistake. Parvati is my number one, and I value my relationship. He basically says I value my relationship with her over my relationship with Adam. And so that's something to take note of. Although I did notice that despite the fact that Adam seemingly went to Ethan prior to the immunity challenge, it wasn't until Adam then went to Boston Rob later after the immunity challenge that they found out that Parvati was in trouble, according to the edit. So theoretically, Ethan might not have actually spilled the beans here. It might have been the further mistake of telling Rob, although that may have just been something that was left out of the edit because the Rob one was more exciting and for sure. And they already had a sense that it was coming. And then they were surprised that Adam actually had the gall to then tell Rob as well.
Yeah, you could see it in the body language. That Adam Ethan conversation did not go well for Adam. Mm-hmm. You could see Adam said, "Hey, what do you think about Parvati?" Ethan did not make eye contact. He was looking in the sand. He gave short answers. Yeah, sure. Yeah, and you could tell when someone reacts that way, they're not it. They're definitely not into the plan if that's the kind of physical signals they're sending you. So that one didn't go as well. It's a really a good point. I wonder if Ethan went back and told them, because we did not see that. We saw later where Rob just blew up and aggressively told everybody, but we didn't really know where Ethan went after that conversation. It's pretty crazy looking forward that I really thought if one of those trios was going to get knocked out, I really thought it was going to be Rob or Parvati. Ethan was my least likely one to go home. Him going home was super shocking.
Yeah, you'd really think so. The only other thing we learned here before we switch up to the next tribe is that Denise is going to quickly tell us that she has been bequeathed a fire token by Danny, and she also now has the full idol because Adam gave her back his half of the idol. I didn't even realize that this was an option, that she had to give it away, but then it could be given back. And so she now has a fully functional idol to herself, and Adam is left without an idol, which actually does kind of matter by the end of the episode, given that they vote differently.
Yes, for sure. I got a little note section here. Okay, let's do for the blue tribe. Boston Rob has two fire tokens. Mm-hmm. He got one from Amber. Parvati now has two fire tokens. Got one from Ethan, who was voted out in episode 3. Michelle, one fire token. Nothing's happened with her advantage-wise. Jeremy, look at Jeremy. Jeremy has one fire token because he got one from Natalie, but then he spent that for safety without power, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he can just bounce out of tribal anytime he wants.
He can just peace out. That's an amazing. That was, what was it? We saw that come up in season 39, but never got played, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Never. I don't think it was ever given to Janet. Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting one. That's a super. I want to see that played. Denise has a fully functional idol. She also has one fire token. She spent one to get the idol. And then Ben, Mr. Advantage King, has remained perfectly advantageous this season. So. Well,
Denise did not have to spend a fire token, right? She found the idol. And so then she was given a fire token. So she should I think she has two fire tokens and an idol.
That's right. That's right. There's so much going on. This is so hard. That's right. Sandra was the one who spent a fire token for an idol. It wasn't Denise. Denise found it with Ben. Okay. We've got that clear.
All right. So we head over to DeKal, the red tribe.
DeKal.
Sandra is fishing. She tells us that she's retiring after this season, retired from Survivor. So she's got a whole new mindset. She wants to try some new things like fishing. And Tyson is going to let us know that he's in some trouble, that he is everyone's target. And he has not really been in this position before, because basically Tyson's game trajectory has always been either he won or he gets completely blindsided or broadsided, you might call it in Heroes versus Villains. But he's never like been on the bottom for an extended period of time here. And so it's kind of a new territory, but he's doing what he can. And so he's trying to get the target pointed elsewhere. And he feels like Sandra is the right person to point the target at, because she is somebody who is weak in the challenges and is very, she stirs things up amongst the tribe. And so he's going to pitch this to Yule and Sophie.
Yeah, so Tyson is in trouble. He has had a rough start to the season. He's played from the bottom. He played very well when his group was targeted. He realized that the three of Tyson, Amber, and Kim were a sinking ship. He very expertly sold Amber under the bus and cut losses and moved on and survived. That was a nice little self-preservation play that I really liked. But you're right, Tyson goes to Yule and Sophie, who are in an amazing position in the Dakal tribe, and he sows these seeds. Hey, how much does Sandra have in the bank account from Survivor? I think it's 2 million. The rest of us only have one. Let's not forget about that. And then we get a confessional from Yule who says, I don't trust Tyson, but this is an option. This is an option. And Yule really goes on about he likes to play with predictable people. He can understand players better. That is Yule, Mr. Democracy Yule. It's so amazing to have Yule back on the television, by the way. He's incredible. And by God, is he in shape? Is he like 42? He's jacked.
Yule and Tony both in great shape.
Yeah, he's shredded. It's unbelievable. He's got the brain and the body. Okay, so we have a great moment from Yule where Yule says, I don't trust Tyson, but that could be an option. But then Yule goes right to Sandra and tell Sandra Tyson is coming for him. And then we get this amazing confessional from Sandra. This is peak Sandra. When Sandra knows someone is coming from her, that's when she really plays the best. Rob on RHAP has said this multiple times. Sandra needs that other entity. Sandra operates amazing when there's a Russell, a Johnny Fairplay, a Game Changers was Tony.
Is it Tyson?
Now it might be Tyson.
Oh, no.
Tyson might be the next one of Sandra's enemies. She sure seems fired up. So they have this amazing, oh my God, the shark scene's incredible. Mm-hmm. Fisher Sandra sets up this net, catches a shark. And then my favorite part of the whole episode was Tony's baby shark. Sandra shark. And he grabs it. It's hilarious. They have an amazing shark breakfast. Just the Tony content.
It almost took my arm off.
Dude, your impressions have gotten really good. You've been practicing. You see these players every season they come back, you get more practice. It gets better and better.
I've actually never done Survivor impressions. It's, I'm sure, a pale comparison to Rob. Yeah. But I try to match the intention behind it rather than like all the details. But I actually really liked what Yule said about wanting to play with people who play rationally, because that's actually what I've always said about, like, if I play Big Brother or Survivor, I want people around me who are other fans of the show who will play a rational game, because it's, as he said, much easier to predict what they'll do. You know that they're going to act in their own best interest in an irrational way, whereas somebody who is irrational might completely misread something or just think that one thing is in their best interest, but it's actually completely not, and it completely tanks you both.
Interesting.
And so clearly he sees Sandra as somebody who is a little more on the irrational side of things versus Tyson, who he feels is a little more rational and can he can play off of that a little more. But we also know that Yule went into the season already skeptical of Tyson, worried about his connection with Rob. And Tyson was actually the person that he wrote Tyson's name down in the, like, who would you vote off sort of thing. So I think that he is very skeptical of working with Tyson moving forward, but it was, I think, an argument that did strike some notes with him. And also it does relate back to something that we saw in episode one, which is that Amber actually was the one that told us, hey, Sandra, you can't trust her. She rats people out. She causes division. And we're seeing Tyson basically make that same pitch to Yule. I also thought it was interesting that he mentioned that Sandra is weak in the challenge. And then later on in the episode, we see her sit out of the challenge. I do wonder if that's going to come into play in the future.
Isn't Sandra like a puzzle queen, though? Isn't she really great at puzzles?
I mean, I guess it doesn't matter if she sits out of the challenge.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I'm really into like sports analytics and the value of certain things in different sports. And I've always been curious about like survivor analytics. In my opinion, a puzzle solver is the most valuable challenge person you can have. The margin of time spent on these physical portions. Well, in this challenge, Rob got tangled up with that little cat ball thing. So that did cost him a little bit of time. But, you know, if you have a person who's really good at puzzles, I think they're a very valuable person to have in the challenges, regardless of their physical strengths. That was an interesting, interesting comment there. Really seems like Tyson is trying to get any footing. Hey, I'm in bad trouble. Who can I throw under the bus? And he decided to go off of Sandra. That was his best call. But it seems like Sandra is really kind of in a pretty good spot. I'm looking at the Red Tribe right now to call. They have 9 players because Amber was the only one voted out. Let's break down the dynamics here a little bit. It seems like it's Yule and Sophie are a power pair. Mm-hmm. And they are working alongside Nick and Wendell.
Yes, who we've heard basically nothing from.
Basically nothing. There's too much. I mean, we got 20 players. We got Edge of Extinction. We got blah, 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 blah. We got a confessional of Nick going, ah.
Yeah. I think he's had 2 confessionals total. One was, ah. And one was, in my opinion, these fire tokens will be important.
That's right. 4 Nicks hurting for content. But I mean, there's too rough. Much, dude. You only got 42 minutes. Yeah, that's. I laughed. I made a mental note. I was like, Nick, what did Nick do this season? Ah, that was pretty funny. So that seems like a power 4. And then mm-hmm. you have this other faction that is Sandra and Tony and Sarah seems to be a bit of a trio. I don't know. We haven't seen too much Sandra and Sarah connections, but it seems like they're.
Yeah, we saw Sophie in the first episode say they were the gritty group who've played together in the past. Mm-hmm. But we haven't really seen them work together in any scenes up until this point. We've only really seen Sarah and Tony together. We haven't really seen Sandra work with them. And one thing that I did find interesting about Yule talking to Sandra is that when he says, hey, I want to let you know, Tyson talked about targeting you. And his pitch was that, hey, Tony and Sarah would definitely be on board. And I found that interesting. I wonder if that is actually true. If Tyson has ingratiated himself a little bit with Tony and Sarah, and that maybe they don't actually see themselves working very tightly with Sandra, or maybe they're just giving Tyson lip service, or maybe Tyson is just pretending to have people on board to make his argument seem stronger. Mm-hmm. But I did think it was interesting.
Yeah. Well, we don't know the details of this Dekal tribe as they just haven't lost many challenges. We just mm-hmm. don't know as much about them. We have more information about the Blue tribe because we have seen them go to tribal more often. So I'm a little bit interested. Question. Did I miss something? Last episode, Kim gave half an idol to Sophie. We see a scene where Sophie says, yeah, that was a mistake, twirling her mustache, her evil mustache, which is amazing. Sophie's been amazing this season as well. Did Sophie return it? What's going on with that idol?
We heard nothing about it. We saw nothing from Kim or Sophie this episode.
So as far as we're concerned, Kim does not have an idol yet. It's still half and half.
Correct.
And it doesn't seem like Sophie's going to give that back to Kim, by the way, from the content we got.
So does not seem like it.
Okay, we did not see that. Furthermore, Sarah had a big episode this time. Sarah, I mean, I'm skipping ahead.
Well,
we
have to visit Extinction first.
Let's go to Extinction Island. Let's go hang out with Danny. Let's go hang out with Amber.
Hey, they're fishing.
Danny caught a fish.
Woo! Oh, guess what? There's a new scavenger hunt. Let's all go find the thing.
Okay, there's a tree. There's a white tree on the top of the island.
It is a puzzle to solve.
Shells. Fantastic. Yes. I mean, it's fine. It's fine. I know I'm giving them a hard time. It's fine. Credit to Natalie, though. Natalie is still ahead of the game. She's balling. I noticed right away they said they got that clue with the tree. And Natalie beat them to it. She's like, screw these. She ran up there with her intense physical. She's a beast on Instagram, by the way. She's lifting weight every day. She's a monster. So she runs up there. She's playing super, super hard. And then they guess birthdays. They try to figure it out. Then Natalie realizes it's the shells. The shells are in certain increments. She gets the code. She goes and gets it. And this is interesting. So she gets an advantage that is she can sell a steal a vote to someone in the game.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, explain this to me. So she sells it, and then if they buy it, she then receives their fire token. It's actually a transaction.
Correct.
All right. Interesting.
I don't think they know who it's coming from, though.
They don't know.
I don't know if they even know it's going to somebody on Extinction to actually. It's based on what they read. It's like you will have to pay one fire token for it. But I don't know if they're being explicitly told that that fire token is going to somebody on Extinction. It might be the case, but it's not something that I've noticed. But definitely a great episode for Natalie being somebody who's already been voted out. She's definitely winning a lot of fire tokens. She calls herself a billionaire now on Extinction, but she's pretending to be a peasant. But she is definitely getting the most amount of the three women now on Extinction up to this point, has been getting the most amount of content. Granted, she's getting all the advantages, so she would be getting the most amount of content. But it's also very positive content. So, you know, we're definitely seeing a lot of her. I was interested, though, when she calls herself a billionaire, which I thought was funny. I wonder if she's like a Bernie Sanders fan or something. If she's, she says, she's pretending to be a peasant, which makes me curious. Has she hidden the fact that she's found the advantages from the other two women? I mean, when it was just her and Amber, did she just pretend, oh, I guess neither of us got it?
She definitely hid this one, this episode, because, we saw that it was kind of, it wasn't a super big moment, but I did catch it on my second walkthrough. The three of them were by the fire, and then Natalie said she kept bringing up ideas, trying to suggest what it could be. And then Amber said, don't talk about it. It's making my brain hurt or whatever. She was definitely selling the fact that she did not find it to Danny and Amber. She's definitely playing the game there really, really hard. I don't think the other two girls know that she found that advantage.
Surely, though, they went back up to the thing and found it open, right?
You would think so. From the episode,
know somebody got it.
Yeah, it really made Amber and Danny look like it's I'm done with this. Yeah, I've had enough. When you and your friends you go to an escape room that's not that good, and we're like 10 minutes after, we had enough. We don't need to see the end. That's what Danny and Amber kind of looked like. But it's fine. It just pales in comparison to the first scene that we saw in this episode.
Mm-hmm. All right. So she decides to sell the steal a vote to Sarah. And now she tells us the strategy here. She just wants to make sure she finds somebody that will have an available token to play with and is capable, willing to buy it. And clearly in this case, capable of an infiltration. And so she decides Sarah is the right one. I think this is a pretty good call. Sarah, as she will mention, has played a steal a vote in a past season. And she is very much the kind of person who I think is capable of going and completing an infiltration. Tony is probably the only other person that is more capable or interested in this kind of mission. So, but he's probably also more likely to have already spent his token on something.
Yeah, for sure. Random. For sure.
So she has to sneak into the other tribe's camp and steal a vote from one of the torches and then come back. I don't know if like my main question here is what happens if she gets caught? Like,
I'm so curious.
Are they just like Natalie?
Well, yeah.
or sorry, Sarah?
Well, it was impossible to see her with her camouflage. So
yeah.
Who's there? Oh, I can't see her. The camouflage was amazing.
I love that she recruits Tony. He's leading her through the forest with a stick, and then he's got to put some ash on her skin to camouflage. It's to camouflage you. And he has to. They have to spit in it in order for it to stick to her skin. And then my favorite part. One last piece of advice from Tony. Don't say nothing to nobody. As though
that's not the point of the mission. Yeah.
Yeah. As though she's going to like walk up to like, hey, Ethan, I was thinking,
man, this is more great Tony content. The producers are just salivating this is amazing. Cause Tony, amazing first season. One of the most legendary wins ever, flopped hard in Game Changers. And he has come into the season with a lightness about him, something that has sparked off the television, and he's in a fantastic position. This is amazing. Tony plays a goofball. He knows how to create content on the show, though. He knows that if he does funny things, the ladder, the shark, the camouflage. The camouflage scene had me dying. It's like from The Lion King when Simba gets a little bit of like dust on their forehead or something. It was so funny. And also credit to Sarah. Sarah has always been such a savage, such a villain on the show. In Game Changer, she was cutthroat. She's having fun. That's a scene where she got involved in, and that shows a lightness to Sarah Lucina. Because with Sarah, we always saw in Game Changers, everyone came out of that game being Sarah's my best friend, Sarah's my best friend, Sarah's my best friend. We didn't really see that on the show. We're like, what is going on here? Really? Sarah was your best friend? Because on this the TV show, she was always so serious, so not having fun. And then credit to her this season. I did not take Sarah Lucina in my draft. I thought she was going to be a premier brute, and she's been one of the biggest surprises. Credit to her for having fun here. And now she has a steal a vote advantage. Yeah. But I am curious, Taryn, what if she just like walked in and woke everyone up? Hi guys. Like, hi,
right?
there's an advantage here. I just wanted to say hello. Like, what if she woke everyone up?
Does it disqualify her from getting the advantage if she gets caught? And then in which case, like, what qualifies as getting caught? I don't know.
We saw this last year at season 39 with Vince, I believe, had to sneak into the end. We'll never know. I'm so curious. What if somebody wakes up, but we'll never know.
Yeah. They have to just keep doing it until somebody finally gets caught.
Yeah. Yeah. The camouflage was one of the highlights of the episode for sure. So Sarah Lucina now has a steal a vote advantage. And as we know, she knows how to use this. Hey, this is a tool she has used successfully before. She got Michaela voted out in Game Changers with this. So, it's like a samurai who's spent 18 years with their katana. They know how to use this weapon. And Sarah Lucina has the, and then we go into commercial and we go into a challenge. Challenge.
One more thing about Sarah. Yes. You talked about how she, in her previous season, a lot of people, my best friend is Sarah. There's a secret scene, where they're doing Tyson's hair. And she has a confessional in the secret scene where she actually, talks about, making friends. She says that she feels she's building friendships, not only relationships, but that she feels like she's actually forming some friendships on the tribe. And she talks about the importance of basically having maintenance on your relationships, which is actually something that I feel like we saw Parv kind of drop the ball on the previous episode with Danny. So I thought it was very interesting to hear that from Sarah, because I agree. I think especially watching Game Changers, which was such a like a dry season in terms of like understanding the real dynamic of what was happening. It was very hard to understand why Sarah was finding so much success, especially when she comes off as dry in the confessionals. But I think that there is a different side of her in the camp life that we don't get to see very often. And I think that we see a little bit of that in that secret scene.
Yeah, it's nice. Good episode for Sarah, and she's off to a great start. Will Cops RS come tumbling down? I you tweeted this out. I love this. Tony voted out Sarah in Cops R Us, and he's using the exact same name. Like, it's amazing that they just go back to the well. It's hilarious.
All right. So yes, we get to the immunity challenge. No reaction really from losing Danny. We see Sandra sit out. The challenge, we start with some Ninja Warrior.
Back and forth. A couple people fall. I love how I think Adam fell, and then he decided to go right through the middle. It's just like, no, Adam, go around.
So but then
I think it was Tyson who said 2 feet on every. So apparently, if you go 2 feet on every square, it's a little bit easier.
You should have watched some American Ninja Warrior.
Yeah. Back to challenge analytics. Just no impact on the outcome. Just that part of the challenge is completely irrelevant. Someone gets a 3 second head start. That's it.
Yeah. They go up a ladder. Tony's very experienced with this, as is Jeremy.
The ladder content this season's unbelievable, man. It's just, yeah. Jeremy goes up the ladder. I think Jeff says, firefighter, goes up his ladder. Man, Jeff loves moments like this where people have an occupation in real life, and he gets to tie this into a challenge.
I will say, I felt like Tony aced the ladder a little bit better than Jeremy.
Yeah, Tony, I mean, they have ladder experience over on Dekal. They know exactly what's up. What did Tony say? I designed it like that.
Very simple. Rob is going to throw the rope to try to pull the they can climb the wall. I was surprised that they didn't have Jeremy do this, considering Jeremy won them their only immunity challenge by throwing things.
For sure.
I figure Jeremy's pretty good at that, but Ben is the one that's going to eventually come in and finish that off. But it gives the Dakal tribe, the Red Tribe, a big head start on the puzzle. Probst at some point, I think, said they had like 2 to 3 minutes of head start on that puzzle. We do see Rob and it was Michelle, right, who was with Rob. Close the gap on it was Sophie and somebody else.
Sophie and Wendell was being very active.
He was very vocal.
I always think in these Survivor challenges, the Matt has to actively solve the puzzle as well.
Yeah.
Oh my God. They're very important. If you can look at that one, they're almost more important than the people solving the puzzle are more important, but they're very important. They're identical puzzles. What pieces you can look, the answer's right to your right. Just look at the answer and then tell your tribe where to put it. So Parvati got very involved as well. Near the end, when the blue team was rallying, Parvati was take this, take here, take this, take there. Wendell was very active from the Met. Who was it? It was Sophie.
Sarah, they're saying in the chat.
Sarah. That's right. And
we also, Russell Hans has once again joined us in the chat. He's cheering on Adam.
Nice, dude. I'm a fellow Adam fan as well. Good to see you, Russell. A legend of the game for sure. We were talking about you last night, actually, our little Survivor watch party. We were talking about how Russell in Samoa really reinvigorated the show for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
So anyway, the challenge comes down to the last piece. Very, very, very exciting. Sometimes these editors, they edit it to to feign that it's close. And but this one, you can tell when they have the wide shot and you can see how close it is, then you know, oh, this is actually close. When they're cutting back and forth, it's like, okay, is it really that close? You know?
Yeah.
That's the
Amazing Race kind of thing where it's like, oh, they're neck and neck. And then then an hour later they show up.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So Dakal is going to end up taking this one. And that means that Sele, the blue tribe, is going to be heading to tribal once again. Before we cut to commercial, Denise tells us this is a critical vote. It could really blow up some people's games. It's going to be the truth. She also says it's going to be Parvati, which was not the truth.
Yeah, it was not the truth. What is Denise's tribal immunity winning percentage? Like 4%
she's won
or something? One of like 17 or something?
In the history of her time on the show.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Denise in tribal challenges is like 1 out of 15 or something. Like she's like.
And I think Tyson is like really up there in terms of like his tribe gets a lot of immunities.
Tyson is very, very, very good at these games. So that's right. So Blue Tribe is going to go from 8 to 7. Blue Tribe is going back to see Jeff. And we're coming back from a commercial. And there's this amazing, amazing shot.
Great scene.
Oh, my goodness. This is fantastic. This is prime Survivor. This is the content we want. There's an amazing shot. We go back to the Blue Tribe. Everyone's got an old-fashioned standoff. No one wants to make the first move. Eyes are darting back and forth. And I think we got a good few confessionals. I think it was Jeremy who stood up first and went to the beach.
Yeah, I just love this. Like the shots were beautiful. The music was awesome. They cut to every single person's face, like sitting around the fire. Rob tells us this is not a normal season of Survivor. Everybody knows what they're doing. Michelle says nobody wants to be the first to walk off, but Jeremy is gonna say I knew Ben would follow me if I got up. So, but as soon as we get up, the guns are gonna be out. They're gonna be shooting. The knives are gonna be stabbing. It's gonna be chaos, and it is. And this it's so fun to watch this tribe. And I love that every single person is on point, strategically, like ready, playing the game hard. This is great stuff.
It's incredible. This is so good. And this tribe is really demoralized. You know, going to tribal 3 out of 4 is really, really tough. They could have used a break. You know, they could have used a break to reset mentally after the Danny vote. But no, they go right back to it. So instantly we get a vibe that Parvati's in trouble. We have a scene where she's swimming. She's swimming by herself. She's on the beach just chilling. And then it seems like all 5 of those newer school players come together. They talk through the pros, the cons. And it seems like they really do want to keep Rob around for maybe challenge ability, even though Rob's kind of he's kind of not done well at these challenges.
That has been like the sort of I've heard that a lot, like this. It must be challenge ability. But I'm not sure that's the case. Hearing from Adam, Rob trusts me. Hearing from like seeing what Jeremy and Michelle are doing and what they might be doing in the future. I feel like it's less so challenges. It's more so that they feel that they have a good of the three of them. They feel like the best relationship with Rob and that they can use him moving forward. And they want to keep him around for as long as possible. They just need to make sure that he doesn't have enough power to like overpower. It's like they want the big lion as their like attack dog. But they can't have, they need to like keep it in the cage because it's a very dangerous animal. And if they let it have too much power, if they leave the cage unlocked, the lion's going to eat them. So they're playing a dangerous game here, but it does seem like it's the case. And I thought very interesting here. We hear from Ben now just earlier in the episode. Ben was saying, I want Rob out, but they're saying Parv. So fine. But now he's telling us in confessional just a half episode later. Parv is the most dangerous because she can manipulate people, which is scarier than Rob or Ethan. He has been convinced. Like, we see this on Big Brother all the time where, like, somebody feels a certain way and then they have conversations and then they feel a different way and they have no idea that their mind has been changed by somebody else. They think that they came up with this on their own. And I feel like this is what we're getting from Ben here, that he has been completely convinced that Parvati is the one that needs to go. And now he doesn't want Rob to go instead.
Yeah, it seems like Adam was the main person pushing for Parvati, because Adam, like you said, thinks he can trust Rob. So it seems like, hey, the 5 people, they don't have an idol. We're not splitting votes. Let's put our votes towards Parvati. Then Adam thinks, hey, maybe I can still vote out Parvati, but salvage something with Boss or Rob. So we have this amazing scene where Rob is sitting with Adam
there's a confessional first though.
Is there? What confessional was it?
It's the worst confessional I think he has in the episode where he says,
oh yes. Yeah. Oh, he says,
it's impossible to vote somebody off in this tribe and not piss someone else off in this group. Or is it? And he gives this like very cocky smirk. And it's like, if this had worked, that would have been fantastic. But when it doesn't work, it looks bad. It looks bad, Adam.
Yeah. And obviously, I mean, we're not here to talk about Big Brother Canada. I've been there over and over and over and over again. Like over arrogance, the cockiness, and just have, you know, just unable to execute, you know?
He's on the all winter season. Shoot for the stars.
He won. Yeah, why not?
If you can look cocky and arrogant and then also perform on the all winter season, you will cement your legacy forever.
Yes, go and play. And again, Adam coming into the season, out of the 20 winners, people would consider him bottom tier compared to his competition. If he just lays around, he could easily slip into a goat spot. Go try to blindside Parvati, someone you've idolized your whole life. Why not? You know, you're an all winner. You won the game. You're playing on house money. There's nothing else to prove, you know, even though we get a confessional from Michelle later that she says, even though I won, I have something to prove. And I feel like Adam had something to prove. So like we said, the plan to band together, weaken Rob, take up Parvati. Great. Fantastic. There are other options. The execution here for Adam to go to Rob is mind blowing. This was insane.
He tries to turn the tables on Rob and be the godfather, be the like the other mafia boss that's like, you've lost and now you must submit yourself to me. Rob comes to Adam. He says, all right, we're going to do, we're thinking Ben.
Let's role play this, by the way. I'll be Adam here. You're
okay,
Rob.
Okay. All right. We were thinking, you know, Ben, Jeremy, we were thinking Ben.
No.
All right. So Michelle or Jeremy?
No. Are you willing to do anything else?
You want to go there?
Would you consider it?
I'm open to it.
Rob just, yeah, he opened to it. But again, the body language is Rob. The thing is, when in the history, we've had Rob on the show a lot. When in the history has Rob ever been okay with this? You know?
Right. And that's what he says.
Yeah.
Adam is trying. Like, he's, hey, you know, Parv will come for you in the long term. You know it. And Rob continues to play. Are you sure you have the numbers? Are you sure? And he says, yes, I'm telling you. He's like, dude, so am I going to still be protected after? And Adam's like, yeah, I have your back 100%.
And then we get a confessional from Rob being like, who does this punk think he is, basically, that he's going to vote out my number one and I'll be okay with it.
Is this kid crazy?
Is this kid crazy?
I don't play like that. He's seen every episode. He knows.
Yeah, he's like that. So take a shot at Parvati, but I feel like you don't tell Rob the plan ever. For multiple reasons. A, if he knows the plan, they are able to counter it with idols, which are almost played every single episode. You know, you can't let him know the plan, or take out and then just mend the fence the next day. Hey, I had to do this for ABC. I hope you're not mad. I hope we can work together. I feel like telling him before is just so suicidal. It's so crazy. And obviously there's content we're not getting from the show. But after the season airs and Adam can talk more freely, I'm really curious to dive into his mind. And it was very baffling, and it made me yell at the TV, and it made me think my good friend Adam was going home this episode for sure.
Yeah. Adam tells us, he says, you don't go against the Godfather. And this is a repeat of a line he said in the previous episode. You don't go against the Godfather. He says, but Boston Rob is somebody that I want to work with long term. And he says, strategically telling people some truths at the right time can be very helpful. I did it in Millennials versus Gen X. It has backfired on a lot of people who played this game, but I think it can work. And just watching the scene was nuts to me to see, even though Boston Rob, you don't know for sure that Boston Rob is acting in this scene. You have a feeling that he's not going to take this lying down, but just seeing Adam being in the driver's seat, and Boston Rob sitting there being like, oh man, dude, like, but what about me? Am I going to be okay? And Adam's like, don't worry, I got you. Like, what a role reversal. It was so weird. Just that whole dynamic was just so strange. And of course Rob is going to have none of it. So he goes straight to Michelle and Jeremy. And this was another great scene. And I tried to like watch the facial expressions as much as I could. Michelle starts off with, this typical sort of, your conversation has been interrupted. Now you need to make up a lie about what you were talking about. We were talking about through the whole Adam versus Denise versus Ben scenario. So apparently that was those were the people that Rob was talking to Jeremy and Michelle. It was either Adam, Denise, or Ben. He was talking to Adam. It's either Jeremy, Michelle, or Ben. And so clearly that's why he wanted it to be Ben. But Rob interrupts her. Never mind that. I know
bullshit.
That's fake.
That's fake. That's bullshit. I know what's up. And it's just incredible.
I know what's up. Adam told me. I know the plan to blindside Parv. And Jeremy, cool as a cucumber, he's like, he gives Rob a wink, and he's like, it's not happening. Parv is not going anywhere.
Jeremy, in my Survivor draft, Jeremy was my number one overall pick. I think he's just a perfect Survivor player, perfect for the season, and he's come to play. Oh my God, episode one. Gets blindsided, loses his best friend. How does he respond in a professional Survivor manner? The way this dude has, as cool as a cucumber, put himself in the middle of the tribe. He's social. He's not the most social. Physical, not the most physical. The dude is just destroying it. I'm so happy for him. I met him one time. I have a funny story where this is bad. I might not actually say that story. It's very embarrassing. Anyway, Jeremy is the best So I thought I knew he was a Survivor player. I thought he was someone else, and I was like, oh man. And then he's like, and then I realized, like, oh no, you're Jeremy Collins. Anyway, I've confused him for somewhere else. It was so embarrassing, but he's so good, man. His wink to Boston Rob to calm him down and say that's not happening. Jeremy always speaks at the same volume. Has he ever yelled on the show? Or
only,
like,
only in confessional, like, when he's annoyed about all the dumb people on his cast.
Yes,
man. These people are so dumb.
I love this guy. This guy is so fun to watch, and he's awesome, and he's doing amazing.
And you're totally right. Like, I've met a lot of Survivor players, a lot of Big Brother players, and certain, you know, often winners, certain players will just, they have something about them that you get into their presence. It's usually like an awkward conversation because it's at a loud bar and you don't know each other and you're just kind of saying hi. There are some people who are just immediately able to put you at ease. They just have something about them. Dan Gheesling is one of these people. You are one of these people, Kevin Martin.
Oh, thank you, dude.
And Jeremy absolutely is one of these people.
I can't accept, you can't mention me among those other people. I can't accept, but I do appreciate that.
In terms of just like warm, friendly sort of atmosphere that you exude, you put people at ease around you. I don't know if you were that good in the house at it, but you were very
Definitely not. That's funny.
Yes. But yeah, Jeremy's definitely one of those people.
Yeah. He definitely is, and he, it obviously works for him on Survivor as well as outside of the island. So he says, dude, it's not going to happen. And then we get an angry confessional from Michelle, basically saying, what the hell, dude? What, Adam, like, what are you doing? We had a plan, and Adam sold Jeremy and Michelle under the bus. Michelle is pissed.
Yeah. And Rob also, before he leaves, though, he pitches, he said, well, let's, can we do Adam? And that's this right. this was kind of bad because Michelle says, fine. Yeah. And Jeremy's like, I guess we could. And Rob's like, okay, we're good. And then he brings Parv in, and Parv's like, are you serious? He told you about this? And Parv tells us it has to be Adam because he's coming for her. And then there we see another scene where Michelle and Jeremy again agree with Parv there. Yeah, we're going to do Adam. So they did eventually enthusiastically agree to this, but it was very clear from the initial sort of agreement that this was not going to happen.
Yeah, no, it was definitely pretty clear. And yeah, you're right. Parvati wants to chew up Adam's bones and spit him out on Extinction Island. That's correct.
Yeah. So Jeremy and Michelle start talking. Jeremy says he'd like to weaken Rob. Michelle agrees. It has to be one of them. But she says, going for Parv means rocking the boat. And this really brought me back to some previous stuff. This conversation in particular really struck some chords with me from things I remembered about previous episodes. So one of them in particular was in episode one, Jeremy says in confessional, you don't want to rock the boat.
That's
sometimes
right.
When you rock the boat, you fall out. This was also in reference to Adam at the time. Yep. And so we're seeing again that the Parv move is being described as rocking the boat. And Adam is the one doing it. And this time he does fall out of the boat. And so we're hearing this. Jeremy says Ethan would be weakening Rob. And this is when Michelle tells us it pisses her off that Adam would go scurry over to Rob. Definitely hearing some language there. And tell him the whole plan. So she says to Jeremy, let's give Adam a taste of his own medicine. He thinks he knows what's going on. Let's prove to him that he does not. And again, in a previous episode, in the previous episode, Jeremy talked to us about his desire to be the one in control. He doesn't like it when he's not running the show. And so we're definitely seeing here, this is a pretty direct, one-to-one thing here that clearly Jeremy wants to be the one in power. Michelle also talked about wanting to prove herself. She wants to be in power. They don't want to let Adam run the show. This is not Redemption Island. This is a tribe. This is a tribe of winners, and they all want to be the top dog.
For sure. If I had to give a fishy for this episode, give it to Jeremy, dude. Unbelievable play from him. Michelle would be number two for me about who had, and Sarah Lucina is up there as well with her. So those are the top three people who I think had the best episode. It's crazy because Adam does survive, but this was rough. This was tough to see. I don't know what the correct word is. And it's like sloppy, I guess. It was just sloppy. It's too much. You have a plan for him to go to Rob and think that he could do this was optimistic, let's just say.
Yeah, and I mean, I think, again, it's just like, I think especially on a tribe of winners, like, if you play big and you mess up, it's going to look bad because, you know, any wrong move is going to get pounced on. You can't get away with little mistakes like that. I feel like perhaps Adam in Millennials versus Gen X, when he used this sort of radical honesty strategy, it did work sometimes. It didn't work at other times, but he was able to get away with it when it didn't work. It didn't cost him too much. I wonder if that will be the case on this season. It certainly is going to cost him here. We'll see what happens long term. Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors and we'll be right back. And we're back, so let's get back to the show. The final portion we get here before tribal is that Michelle is going to go around telling everyone, Denise and Ben in particular, about Adam being such a rat. Both Denise
says, "Not cool, dude." are we going to do now? Her face is so expressive when she talks. Even back in her first season, which she won, when she talks, her face is like every note she hits, and she's so captivating it. When she talks,
I really want to hear from her about how she feels about Adam. Yeah. Because she knew the plan was to keep Rob and Ethan on board and that Adam wanted to work with them long term. So I wonder if she's actually upset with him for doing it. I wonder if perhaps she's not upset with him for doing it, but she's upset with him for getting caught, or if she's not upset at all and just playing it up to Michelle so that Michelle doesn't realize that she's tight with Adam and that after this vote, she'll go back to Adam and be like, "Hey, this is what happened. I had to do what I had to do, but don't worry, we're still good." I'm very interested to see where her head is at.
I hope we get some Adam. Well, the first scene of episode 4 is going to be Adam being like, "Holy shit, I survived, but I was left out of the vote." I really want some Adam and Denise content to see if that relationship will be healed, if they can understand, or maybe Denise is actually a little bit done with him. And Denise can put her, she can get in the bunker of Ben, Jeremy, and Michelle.
Yeah. So Michelle tells us that her and Jeremy are deciding the future of the tribe. And she says that people didn't think she deserved her win, but she thinks she's finally being able to prove those people wrong. And this is obviously a contrast to episode 1, where she talked about this in after being left out of the Natalie vote and being concerned that she wouldn't have this opportunity because she was in a bad spot. Now she is. And she's proving them wrong. So at tribal, she compares what's happening to dating. It's like dating and you got to go with the people that make you feel the butterflies. Adam talks about he reminds people of the statue of Boston Rob, which Boston Rob was not pleased about.
That was a fun little banter back and forth between Adam and Boston Rob. It's like if what Adam's like, "Some people have a statue," and then Rob says like, "You don't need to remind people." And he's like, the back and forth was quite hilarious, you know, and Adam again, it didn't come off great because Boston Rob just, you know, there's that power, there's that magic to him that he seems to win these verbal banters a little bit more often than he should.
That's the thing about Boston Rob is he will not let you get away with anything. You can't make little snide comments about Rob. He will call you on it so that it intimidates not only you, but anybody else from doing that in the future. And it's very effective for him on Survivor. You know, he's just good enough at doing it that he's able to keep people in line most of the time. But he is not the kind of person to be like, "Okay, I'm going to let this one go and I'm going to get you back later," or even just like, "All right, whatever. I don't want to cause any conflict." Like, that's very far from who Boston Rob is.
I like the dating comment. That was really, really fun. And then Jeff goes to Ben, I believe, and says, "Ben, where are you at?" And he goes off about the bunker.
Bunkers.
And Ben says, "I like where I'm at." And as a viewing audience, we can agree. Ben's why wouldn't we want to be where Ben is? You know, Ben's fine. Ben is in a good place. He doesn't seem to be the super leader, but he's there. He is a solid group. So Ben has a smooth ride, this tribal council.
Yeah. And we hear from Ethan right before the vote that he just wants to get through this vote. I really did not know what was going to happen here. But when I saw this part from Ethan, I started to get worried for Ethan. And I was tricked by the vote reading, just briefly. I knew that it would be three votes, but it was the fourth. It was the vote after. Is there a fourth Adam vote, or is it somebody else? I did not buy into it completely, but I thought this is definitely a possibility. So, you saw Adam definitely, like, his life flashed before his eyes. Yeah. When he saw the first one, he was like, oh no. He saw the second one. He saw the third one. He thought for sure he was done at that point. And he was extremely confused when Ethan's name was read next.
Yeah. As long as, you know, he was extremely confused. It was a bit of a shock. I was blindsided personally. I really didn't think Ethan was in trouble. I really thought it was between Adam and Parvati. The Ethan thing, I guess now that we're talking through the edit a little more, it's like, okay, it makes a little bit more sense. But in real time, these things are flying. It's tough to digest this all. My gut was, I thought Adam was toast. I thought we saw the Parvati vote. I thought it was going to be unanimous Adam. After that, I thought everyone was just sick of Adam scrambling. They were just going to send him home and try to go back. But you're right. The four flipped it and they got out Ethan, which I think is a really smart move for them, you know, because where is Adam going to go? You know, it's like, hey, we left Adam out of the vote, but he's going to come right back in. Is Adam going to go to Parvati and Boston Rob? That seems pretty fried. I don't think there's much there. So I personally, do you think that was the right move, Taryn, or would you have gone ahead and taken out Parvati?
So it's,
or
it's
Rob.
It's a very interesting move, I will say. I think that the safest move is to just go with Parvati and let Adam think that he's running the show. But
for sure,
like we said, like, that's not what Boston Rob does. It's also not what Jeremy does. Jeremy wants to be the one in control, and it's not what Michelle does either. Now that she doesn't want to play the way she did last time, she wants to prove herself to the audience. So they're not willing to play that way. And so they're going the route that I think is more dangerous, but it does have more upside if they can pull it off. So initially I was like, why go Ethan over Parv when, it pisses off Adam? It still pisses off Rob and Parv. And so now you have to hope that you can hold on to the four that just voted, Ethan. And that includes Denise, who could easily go off with Adam. And if Adam decides he wants to now go with Rob and Parv, hey, we both just got blindsided by Jeremy and Michelle. Why don't we work together? Hey, Denise, please come with us. Now all of a sudden you're looking at a potential 4-3 situation, and that would not be good. So there is a lot of risk there. However, if we look at it from the perspective of Jeremy and Michelle thinking that they have a good relationship with Rob, which it appears that they do feel that way, then they might think that, okay, there's two ways that you can go at Rob. You can try and tell him ahead of time and subjugate him to your will, or you can just take the shot and then force him to reevaluate once he's in the new position.
I think in those two scenarios, a large percentage of the time, I don't know, like, almost every time, it's just you take the shot and apologize after.
Yes.
This apologizing before, and then that always changes the plan. The execution percentage is never there. Yeah.
Plus, I feel like it doesn't actually help you.
It makes it worse, I think.
Yeah, because when you say it ahead of time, there's still time to change it.
Yes.
And so now the person that you've told feels like, I can convince you to not do this anymore. I can do something to stop it. And when it doesn't happen, they're more angry that they now had the chance to convince you. Whereas if it's now in the past, well, there's nothing I can do about it. I can either hold on to my grudge, or I can try to work something moving forward. But it's a lot harder to let it go when you were just working for it and trying to talk them into something. You can always tell yourself, if it happened without you knowing, that if I just known, if I just been able to talk to them, maybe we could have worked something out. But you completely get rid of that plausible deniability if you let them know ahead of time.
That's very well said. If you tell them ahead of time, they get to appeal it. They get to, you know, appeal the decision, and then you have to reject their appeal. And it's like you said, you turn them down twice. It's even worse. It's like double the pain. Yeah. So I really think they should have just taken the shot. Let's talk about one option that doesn't seem to be on the table. Why not take out Rob here in this spot? Does that make sense at all? Because the know-it-alls had a great point. In Heroes versus Villains, they did take out Rob. Mm-hmm. Maybe if you're going to take a shot at that trio, it seems like Rob gets really protective of his allies. He gets really defensive. It's like, oh, that he doesn't like that. Maybe you just take the shot at Rob. He hasn't been an all-star in the challenges. You've lost 3 of 4. You know, there's I thought that could have been on the table, but I guess they want to keep him around as a big target. Jeremy does.
Yeah, you know, I really feel like, you know, from what we're hearing from Jeremy and what we're hearing from Adam, they seem to both have the same idea, which is I want to weaken Rob, but I want to work with him long term because I have a good relationship with him. And we know that Jeremy and Rob do have a relationship of some sort from prior to the Poker Alliance.
It's got
to
be weakened now that Jeremy certainly just lied to him for sure.
And here's the thing, though. And here's why I think it makes a little bit of sense for Jeremy and Michelle is that Rob lied to them first. He took out Natalie against their will, against
That's
their wishes,
right.
and betrayed
point.
Them. And so now I do feel like they have a little bit of leeway to say, look, all's fair, right? Like, you know, you took out Natalie, we took out Ethan, but now we're both weakened. We come together, two pairs.
Yeah,
we can make
Good
this
for
work.
Pat. We're even, one for one. We each got one of each other's. Let's come to Tarrant. Do you do this for a living? Is this your job? Holy shit! I thought I saw thought about Survivor on a high level, but damn, I like some of these scenarios are really really interesting. And then we get Ethan bequeathing. Have you bequeathed anything in your life lately? Are you a bequeather?
No, not much of one.
Why? Look at. Let's go. Let's Google synonyms for gift. Like, there's so many options. How do the prize Survivor producers go? Like, oh, bequeath, bingo, that's it. Oh man. I love the bequeathing. Anyway, Ethan bequeaths it to Parvati, which definitely makes sense. So Parvati, she's got the eyelashes, she's got the teeth. Now she has a second fire token. Hello.
Yeah. So I'm very curious to see where Jeremy and Michelle move from here. Obviously, they could just go, you know, try to reel Adam back in, keep Denise, keep Ben, and keep going after the old schoolers. But it does feel like the purpose of going after Ethan. Now, there is also, you know, an argument to be said that now that Parvati, Rob, and Ethan know that they're being targeted, they might use some kind of advantage that they might have gotten from Extinction. And Jeremy knows this because he was sent an advantage from Extinction and Amber is there. And so maybe they feel like Ethan is just the least likely to have any kind of advantage to save himself. But I don't feel like that explains why they blindsided Adam as well. I feel like perhaps the purpose of blindsiding Adam was to show Rob, hey, we're not with him. We did this because we needed Ethan out, but now that Ethan's gone, we can work together. And I think it can work in the short term because Rob really might not have anywhere else to go. Same with Parv. And the risk here, like I said, is that they do go with Adam and they're able to pull in Denise. That's a risk. There's another risk, which is that you cage up a lion, you gotta be careful. And if there comes a swap or a merge, and you know, Rob is able to reunite with Tyson and Kim is still on the outs and, you know, he's able to, pull up another couple of, people, then all of a sudden, in order to work with Rob, the way that Jeremy and Michelle want to work with Rob, Rob needs to remain weakened, and he is not the kind of player that will just sit back and let the game pass him by if he has the opportunity. So it's going to be a very difficult road to walk, but I think this is the one that Jeremy and Michelle want to take. Jeremy because he wants to be in control, Michelle because she wants to prove that this is the kind of game that she can play. I hope that this is where it's going because I think it's really interesting.
It is really interesting, and there's so many storylines going on that are really, really fascinating. Rob's past coming into the season was going to be difficult. I feel like it's borderline impossible now. If Rob finds a way to I just can't see a world where Rob has a very high win equity right now. After all this has gone down, he just doesn't have any power anymore. You know, he doesn't have any advantages. Maybe Amber can crack the next escape room on Extinction and send him something. Rob needs a tool or something to flip this around. But if I had to predict, so there, the Blue Tribe is at 7 now. I don't think we're getting a swap next week. It seems like maybe one more round without a swap. If it's not next week, it's got to be after, right? We got to swap this up soon, you'd think.
Well, yeah. I mean, next week it would be, it's at 15. And so we, there's 4 gone now. Mm-hmm. So next week would be 16. And so they could swap into 2 tribes, or they could wait another week, swap into 3 tribes of 5.
Yes. If Sakal goes to tribal again, I do fear for Adam's life a lot. You know, would Denise maybe fight for Adam a little bit? But Denise just voted against him. It's just doesn't seem like that's as strong of a thing anymore. If they go to tribal again, I could see the 6 of them coming together. Jeremy goes to Rob, hey, Natalie's gone, Ethan's gone, 1-for-1, let's get together. I would really fear for Adam's life if they go to tribal again. I hope they don't. I hope they can win a challenge, take a break, take a breather. If Adam can take a deep breath, maybe get 6 days in the game without having to scramble, just relax a little bit, he's got a shot. But it definitely was not a good episode for Adam Klein.
I am pretty ready for a swap at this point.
I think so too. We've set up a lot of storylines, and I'm very usually anti-swap. I like the tribes to stay consistent. We've had enough, though. I would be a big fan if we had a drop your buffs next episode. It's the right time for it, for sure.
We need Rob and Sandra to be on the same tribe before one of them gets voted out, so that the grudge of her taking out Amber can be worked out. There are some storylines. Like I would love to see Rob and Tyson reunite at some point. Yeah. I think that there are a lot of different things. Parvati and Yule, I need to see interact. I hope.
You think if they're going to swap, the two producers can be like, can we get, you know, 2 of the same color buffs for Sandra and Rob, please? Can we put that? Can we make that happen? You know, the conspiracy theories. I'm a big fan of reality TV conspiracy theories for sure. There's a lot of fun ones, but we really need that storyline to happen. Also, I mean, if we don't swap, please let Red go to tribal council. There's so much interesting stuff over there. We need a little bit more.
I'm just scared for Tyson.
I am scared for Tyson. I'm very scared for Tyson. But I think I would be a little more afraid for Kim, I think, if they went.
Yeah, but I mean, it feels like in the game they're planning on taking Tyson out. But it does feel like he's building something, right? Like we're leading somewhere with Tyson. And I do feel like I also feel like Sandra could be in trouble if we head to a Red Tribe tribal.
If we had to do a top 3 players that need a swap, I think it would be Tyson needs a swap very badly. Mm-hmm. I think Rob needs a swap pretty badly.
I think Parv might need it worse, though.
Really?
Because it's been Parv that's been brought up all this time.
Yeah, yeah. And who else from the Red? Kim could use a swap.
Yeah, really, I think like Tyson, well, Kim, Parv, and Adam, honestly, I would be the 4 people I think the
it
most.
It would be pretty bad. Yule's like, Jeff, please don't stay. Yule wants the same tribe for a while because he's in a gravy position. And then Ethan goes to Edge of Extinction, says, hi, guys. And everyone goes, Ethan. And then he has a great line about, so my alliance with Rob and Parvati didn't really work. Ethan's fantastic. And then we get one final line about Ethan is mentally going to be able to handle Extinction because it's perils in comparison. Everything on a reality show perils in comparison to the cancer journey that he went on, which is an incredible, incredible story. And I'm happy that Adam made it because he is a friend of mine. But to see Ethan go home, it does hurt, you know. We've had a pretty good boot order so far in terms of the betterment of the show. It's like, I hate to say this because these are all amazing people. Losing Natalie was a little rough. I would like to see Natalie. Losing Amber, it's like, we can live with that for the show. It's like, okay, I think it's like in terms of characters, I was fine with that. Losing Danny, fine. There's, you know, it really was like Game Changers was rough. We lost so many big personalities pre-merge. I was happy with the boot order. Losing Ethan is tough, but I mean, the cast is so amazing. We're going to have a lot of heartache along the way. We're gonna have some legends going home, but Ethan was really a joy. He had a lightness to the game for sure that was really, really popping off the camera. So losing him is rough, but from top to bottom, a pretty good episode of Survivor. I'm going to give it an 8.5, an 8.5.
Yeah. I gave it a 9 out of 10. I rate all the episodes I watch of everything.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Very close. Yeah. There's still room for that 10 out of 10. But it was, I felt full. I felt really, really full. And I went to bed happy after this episode.
Yeah. And to Ethan's credit, his alliance with Rob and Parv should have worked out for him, right?
Yes.
Like he was in a good spot. And I think that if this had not been an all winners season, that he easily could have won this game. If this had been a normal all-star season where the level of gameplay was just a little bit lower, we could have seen him really find success in the spot that he was in. But I think only on an all winners season is Ethan the one voted out ahead of Robin Parv.
It's crazy for sure. If you want to play Monday morning quarterback, maybe he could have done a little more to keep Danny. That was maybe the spot where it kind of slipped away potentially.
It does seem like the Danny exposing the old school alliance was the death knell for Ethan's game, because prior to that, Ethan, I think, was benefiting the most from not being too closely associated with Rob and Parv, and that he was able to mix in with the other players a decent amount. But I think once the old schooler thing was outed, people then started talking about him as, oh, he's too linked to Rob and Parv.
You mentioned relationship maintenance, which is a thing that I struggle with a lot, and it bit me a few times in that. And when I had a good connection, locked down good, it's like, okay, I can put that on the back burner for a couple of days. No, you need to feed. It's a baby. They need food every 3 hours. They need that nutrient, or else they're going to start crying, and you don't want to. That's a strange analogy, but but you know, that's, you need to constantly feed those relationships, because the game is so fluid. Especially, they keep talking about how fast the pace is this year. I don't really know. I've never played Survivor, but it seems very, very light. It seems like things are popping off every second or something. You know, it seems quick.
Yeah. All right. So there were a couple of secret scenes. I already mentioned one, the one with Sarah. Tyson also had a confessional in the Tyson hairdo one, where he also talked about bonding and saying the more that they win the immunities, the more time he has to work on people. And that's great for Tyson, because, of course, people just love him. And so the more time he has to make them love him, then the better a chance he'll have once they go to tribal.
For sure. By the way, this is very early, but what if like you will at the challenge, like, oops, the puzzle, I'm not doing very well. Oops, I kicked over the can. It's like, oh shoot, we have to send home Tyson now. Like, that could be a good thing, you know?
Honestly,
I'm always shocked, because in Big Brother, it's throwing challenges are a staple, because there's never team challenges in Big Brother, so it's always enticing for individuals to throw challenge. But I'm always shocked. I really don't think the producers like this concept. Survivor's about grit, push yourself, get off the couch, 39 days on the island. The fact that someone would voluntarily lose a challenge, they show it sometimes, but I feel like they sweep it under the rug. It's like, very often people are incentivized to throw challenges. Like, that group could probably toss in the challenge and then get rid of Tyson or Kim, and that could really help them. So I'm always shocked that's a strategy that isn't talked about more.
It is a risky one, though, especially, I think, especially in a season like this, actually, or I think there are a lot of players are trying to play I think a lot of players were trying to play safe on Sele until they, about three tribals in, they're finally playing a little more aggressively. But I think that I think they're worried about their legacy, right? And if you are behind a thrown challenge that backfires on you, that's much worse than, you know, just having a normal tribe situation where you end up getting voted out because of whatever. So a riskier move like that really puts you out there.
It comes down to, I keep making these sports analogies. So in the analytical world of football, people have discovered that going for it on fourth down is a very profitable thing to do. And this is transferred into professional football, where that it's used as a risk. People are like, punt the football. Old school strategies always punt the football, punt the football, punt the football. But no, it's like there, if the right decision is to throw a challenge, the risk level shouldn't dictate that. This is obviously a tough comparison, but I want to bring it up as an example, because a loss is a loss. An L is an L.
Yep.
That's a standard metric, you know? But if, like, for example, JT on Heroes versus Villains giving up the idol and then going home, it's like, oh God, that's an L. You know, it's like that one stings with you. Whereas, like, someone like Ethan. That's an L. They're both the same result, but they're done in different ways. And so I would like to see, you know, some strategies like some more tribal throwing, because my brain always works like that a little bit. But are we doing fire making on this? Are we really going to make the final four make fires at Winners at War? Is that still a thing? Can we get rid of that production? Is that necessary? Like, oh, really? Oh, man, it's so good, but it could be a little bit better. It's not perfect because it's okay. I've been happy with most of this. I can stomach the amount of advantages so far. I can live with it, but I'm hoping, please, please, please just let this cash shine, because they're doing it. They're giving you gold every single shot. So just let them be the stars.
Yeah, we also had a secret scene of Wendell getting a little bit of content here. It was a whole scene dedicated to Wendell building the same game that we saw Rob playing last episode with the little loop and the hook that you like.
Oh,
I don't know what it's called, but
play that at a bar in Calgary.
Yeah, it's at bars addicting. Sometimes.
Me and my friends would drink and play that little ring game for hours. It was so fun. We played for hours, like 3 hours one day. It's amazing. What's it called? Though
I don't know, I should have looked it up. Ring on a string. That's probably it. But I thought it was funny that that Wendell was shown like, oh, I'm building this because I'm so like nifty and like and good with my stuff. Yeah. But like Rob has already been playing it on the other tribe.
That's funny.
It's so weird they came up with the exact toss. Same game.
Tiki Toss. That's really? Hilarious. Yeah, that's a very entertaining game for not a lot of like, it doesn't take very long to build. That's so funny that they were both playing that. I've had most of the secret scenes. Where can I get every secret scene? Is it on Twitter, YouTube?
CBS on the CBS website is okay. where I've been finding them.
I'm gonna go back and watch everyone because I need more Survivor.
Yeah, this season in particular.
I saw Ethan doing a disgusting bird mechanic with his.
Did you see the Ethan and Parvati one last episode?
Yes, it was amazing. Yeah. It was really, really, really good. It was really good for sure. Looking forward. I mean, we got an exciting. We're going to have some episodes that are a 6, a 5. We can take those. We don't have to bang out 9s and 10s every time, but maybe, who knows? Maybe we can maintain the amazingness that is this season.
Yeah.
Who is your winner pick, Taryn?
Tyson.
Tyson. Okay. Yeah. Mine was.
This is Jeremy. A Tyson Stan podcast. So
I'm a big fan of Tyson. Oh my God. He is the funniest. He is I love his sense of humor. He cracks me up. He is the funniest. If Survivor gave away $1 million for social media presence, he would be the Rupert Bonar this year for sure. He's killing it on social media. He's hilarious.
Yeah. So there was, I noticed a lot of camaraderie in general on Dekal. There were a lot of Dekal secret scenes, and there's just a lot of like tribe unity happening.
You're having shark steak, you're winning. Well, I would feel good about myself if I'm kicking the other team. They're kicking ass. Yeah. Some of these challenges have been stomp fest. They're destroying them. There should be some happiness over there. Sorry, go ahead.
Jeff Probst has been doing little recaps of each episode as well. And in this episode, he talked about he was very pleased about Natalie calling herself a billionaire. He's like, it's just like a real economy. It's great. Yeah, exactly what we wanted.
If I went to my local currency exchange and I wanted to buy one fire token, like how much, what's the market going rate for fire? Is it like what, like 3K or something for like, what's the value?
What's the value of like somebody going out and finding an immunity idol? Because you can buy an immunity idol with it, right? So it's worth one immunity idol. If it takes, let's say on average 5 hours of searching to find a hidden immunity idol, what's minimum wage?
For sure. Exactly. Yeah. It's so
$15, $15 minimum wage. Then we're looking at what did I say? Five. So it's like $75.
Yeah. That stuff is so fascinating that because like these questions don't have an answer, but to think about them is very, very interesting. Like what is the value of an idol? Like what is the value of an idol? Well, A, you can not be voted out. B, even more importantly, the value of knowing other people don't have the idol. Your options in your playbook are so open. If for Denise right now, she has an idol. She knows, I mean, there could be a second one or whatever. And then the third, the ability to bond people and say, hey, I have the idol, even though that didn't work out for Kim and Sophie. There's so many layers to the to this game. It's really unlimited, and it's fun to think about as a fan.
I think there's a better way to calculate the value. I think that if we look at having an idol, what does having an idol do for your chances of winning the game overall? Because having an idol does increase your odds. So, right. So we look at whatever percentage that is, and we then we calculate out from $1 million, and that will find us the value of
an idol. Oh, that's perfect. Oh, dude, that's so smart. So if you're like, if your win equity goes up by 2%,
right,
you take 2% of $1 million, and then that's, dude, Taryn, you're a genius. That's actually, that's a great answer.
We're going to find it out for the next podcast.
It's impossible to quantify win equity, even though that would be fascinating.
Well, we can look at like winners who have had an idol versus winners who haven't, right?
Yeah, yeah. So, well, look at Tommy last year. He did it plain Jane. Didn't need it.
It's pretty rare these days.
Standard of play was a little lower on 39 though, but he did awesome. Dude, Taryn, this has been so fun, and this has been very, very enjoyable.
Yes. So one more thing before we get to the Legacy Watch. Prop said that one of his favorite moments of all time was the infiltration scene with Tony and Sarah. He's very pleased.
Come
about
on,
that.
Jeff. Jeff.
He was apparently hyping up episode 3. There's a Hall of Fame sequence in episode 3.
Jeff?
Yeah.
Come on, Jeff. Come on. It was good. You've done 40 seasons. No, come on. The camouflage was hilarious. I was high on the ledge, but Jeff's metric for what's a good season, what's bad. What is he? He's the Botox has seeped into his brain. I love you, Jeff, but for you to call that one of the best scenes ever is crazy.
Yeah. All right.
Your show is so good, Jeff. I can name like 35 off the top of my head that are better, but sorry, my brother's calling me. Let me decline that. My brother wants to play video games. I will do that later because we have to talk about the Legend Watch.
Yes, this is awesome. Legacy Watch. We got
this
it right
is
here.
My shit. This is graphs, rankings, tier rankings. Dude, yes. I tweeted out a while ago. I tweeted out a list, a ranking list of my Big Brother Canada rankings. And oh shit, it's like, oh no, it's like the amount of ads and mentions and hate I got for that was like, you know, I put myself above Ike, and some people don't like that. So I heard about that for a while, but it's fun. I love this stuff. I love okay. So we got legend tier. Can everyone is this in podcast form? Can our listeners see this?
There are listeners. So we will be describing things as we go, but if you are watching on YouTube or you want to see the list, you can go ahead and find us on YouTube, and we do have a visual for you. I do have one update from the last one. I leave the survey up all week long, even after the podcast ends. So, people can still vote until the next episode airs. Obviously you want to get your vote in before the podcast so that we can talk about the votes, but what had happened is that Yule had previously been in the legend tier but had dropped down to the top tier, but it was so close that he actually moved 1/100th of a point up over the course of the rest of the week, and he did land back in the legend tier by the end of the week. Wow. in the rankings last week. So
okay, so set the met. Is this is including past games and this current season, correct?
Right. So I took a baseline from how did you think of them before the season started? How do you think of them after the premiere? How do you think of them after week two? And now we're looking at what do you think week three? Where do you see them? And so my prediction is that we're going to see a lot of movement, a lot of like reactionary movement, but then for the most part, we'll see things start to, you know, being pulled back to where they were before, unless we get constant reinforcement of that movement.
There's going to be a recency bias. People are going to remember the previous episode a little bit more. Okay. I agree with most. I can tweak a few things on this list, but I can get down. I might bump Tony up to legend tier in terms of, well, if entertainment's a metric, he would be in a legend tier. Well, but this is a pretty good list. Yeah,
I think this is focused on strategy, but there's no clear criteria here.
Bonus marks for entertainment for sure. This is I think I would drop Ethan to middle.
Well, we'll see what happens here.
Yeah.
What has happened is that Parvati actually started on top, followed by Sandra and then Rob. Over the course of the previous episodes, Rob has been steadily climbing. However, what we're going to see here in the legend tier is that Rob is going to actually fall behind Parvati and Sandra with this episode. His legacy has gone down. And I will say, I actually disagree with this one personally. I feel like, because I've seen this sentiment a bit after this episode, that Rob is playing an inflexible game. He doesn't have the ability to adapt to different situations. He always plays the same way. And this is what Rob Cesternino said on the Know-It-Alls last night, which I think he was making a good point, and I think he's completely right. But I think it might be being interpreted in a way that isn't favorable to Rob, Boston Rob, when I'm not sure that should be the case. Because as I've gone through this episode, like I said, when Rob is presented with a situation where he's in the minority and people want to take a shot, they're going to him and they're not actually taking a shot at him. And it's not that he's inflexible. It's that he is not letting them walk over him in the same way that Jeremy wasn't necessarily letting people walk over him. So I think there's a neat comparison here. In the first episode, we saw Tyson and Kim both be put in a spot where they were in the minority. They were either told or were able to suss out that they were in the minority. And we saw two different reactions. We saw Tyson go like, all right, anybody but me, Kim, Amber, I don't care. We saw Kim kind of like freak out. I've never been here. And just kind of like just begged on her knees. Just like, please, not me. What we see from Rob is different. And I think it's because of how good he is personally. And you know, I love Tyson, but I think that the difference here is that Rob has those relationships. When Tyson is told that he's on the outs, he doesn't really know why or how or where everybody stands, because if he did, he could do something about it other than just like hope for the best, right? But Rob knows exactly where everything stands. So when Adam tells Rob, hey, it's Parv, Rob is able to go, okay, well, I know who I need to go to make this, to do something about this. He goes to Jeremy and Michelle. And no, he does not succeed in getting a target off of the old schoolers in general, but there's a massive difference in what happens in this tribal, what actually happens and what could have happened. Ethan going home is actually much better for Rob in the way that it happened, because like I said, now Jeremy and Michelle are much more open to potentially working with Rob and Parv because they ousted and Adam. If Adam had been leading the charge and had successfully taken out Parvati, then it would have been 5-2, Rob and Ethan, where Rob is the much bigger target of those two. But now there's a much more messy situation that they've got to deal with. And that's largely because of how Rob responded. I don't think it was a bad way to respond. I think it was one of the best ways to respond. Yeah. The only way it could have been more successful is if he had actually been able to take Adam out. But you know, you can't always work miracles. But I think what I'm saying here is that the more I see of Rob here, the more I value what he's saying when he says that relationships are what are important in this game. And his relationships seem to be rock solid, and they seem to be coming in handy at every step of the way. And I don't see him as being inflexible. I see him as being successful in being able to do these things where other people might not be, because he knows the lay of the land and he has those relationships.
That was a lot, but all very well said. And Rob's game is a little bit tough to interpret this year. I agree with a lot of you said, but he feels a little stiff, though. He does feel a little inflexible to me personally. I got that sense watching this episode of him maybe not being as fluid as he could be in the future, because he seems like Parvati, Ethan, these are my people, and under no circumstances will I turn my back on them. So I hear what you're saying, but I do agree with the people voting on the survey that I would bump him below Parvati and Sandra in the top legend tier.
All right. It is very close. It is each one of them are separated by 1/100th of a point. Wow.
It's a blessing that those three are still in the game after four tribals. I thought one of them for sure would get taken out just because they are in the red alert target, but they've all survived.
Very much so. We actually also saw Sandra jump above Parv. So it's Sandra, ooh, Parv, Rob by 1/100th of a point. And I think that Parv has also dropped a bit, being targeted now for 2 episodes in a row. Also not getting a lot of content of her saving herself. It's a lot of Rob saving her, I think, which is not helping. But it's also hurting Rob more than it's hurting her. So,
and Parvati talking about how she wants to spit out the bones of Adam and then that plan not falling through. I can get behind that too. I understand. I see where the people are coming from.
Yes. All right. We do see that Yule now has a little more definitively dropped back down into the top tier from the legend tier.
What is this, like a real time Stark market? Is this coming in second by second?
I'm showing you the changes.
Yule dropped down like what, 7 seconds ago?
Based on this week's poll.
Okay, gotcha. So, I thought you were reacting second by second.
No. Yeah. The previous week, he ended at the legend tier, but that was after the podcast had aired. I see. And so this time, he is a little more firmly up there in the top tier, just above Tony, actually. Tony is very high up there as well. But I think, you know, we didn't see a ton from Yule. He got such strong content in the beginning. We saw a reactionary move up. And now I think what we're seeing is that sort of normalization. He's falling a little bit back down. Yep. I think that Yule absolutely could end up in the legendary tier if he continues to have great content throughout the season. But it's going to take more than just a, you know, great premiere episode, it looks like.
I completely agree on that. We're picking hairs, like especially between Yule, Tony, and Tyson. All could be in that top legend tier. They're amazing Survivor players, amazing entertainers as well.
Yeah. So Tony's right behind Yule, still getting some great stuff. I think that Tony actually has, he moved up just a little bit in terms of the numbers. Tony's on the rise here based on what the content that we're getting from him. However, previously, Tyson was behind Tony. Tyson is actually going to fall back a couple of spaces after this episode behind Jeremy.
Makes sense.
And also behind Kim. So he had surpassed Kim. Kim started in the legend tier, fell pretty rapidly, then got behind Tyson, eventually fell below Tyson. But now she is, again, we're seeing a little bit of normalization. She started very high. We saw a bad episode or two, but she was not in this episode, and actually not seeing her has made her numbers come back up a little bit. So interesting to see that that's being normalized up there a bit. So this is the correct order here. Now, Tony followed by Jeremy, who definitely saw a big boost from this episode. And then after Jeremy is Kim, who has moved up a little bit as well. In fact, actually a decent amount for Kim. So there's Kim, and then Tyson falling there. And then after Tyson is Sophie.
Did Sophie start in the middle tier and get bumped up to the top tier after such a strong premiere? That makes sense. Yeah.
Yep. Sophie's still hovering right around the same space right now. She, based on the strength of what she had, she is not falling back down right as of yet. And she's still, in my opinion, in the best spot of the game.
Whoa, the best?
Yeah. The majority tribe, and has shields around her that are bigger targets.
I could argue for Yule.
I think Yule is definitely there as well, but I think Yule is a little bit more appetizing as a target.
Could argue for Jeremy as well. I can get behind Sophie being the best spot, but she's coming out of the gates flying. She kind of preseason, she was a little under the radar as not the most exciting person to see back, but she's been fantastic. And if funny in confessionals, I don't remember Sophie being funny in, what was the season with Ozzy and, Coach? What was the season
South
called?
Pacific.
South Pacific. That's right. She wasn't known for her witty confessionals, but she's brought it this season.
Mm-hmm. All right. So after Sophie, we're actually going to see that Sarah down in the middle tier is going to make her way back up to top tier.
Oh, Sarah Lucina getting a bump. Yeah,
she did start in the top tier, down at the bottom of the top tier, but she's slowly fallen over the course of the episodes. But after this episode, she got some good content. She's back up in the top tier, back to the position she was in before she started, basically.
Yeah, top tier Sarah. I agree. She's a great Survivor player. She's fantastic.
We're also going to see another big jump from this episode. This is a massive. Ooh,
wait. Don't tell me. Let me guess. Oh, it's Denise, obviously.
No, it's not. What? Denise.
Wait, let me guess. Wait, someone gets a big jump.
Yep.
Natalie on Edge of Extinction.
It is Natalie on Edge of Extinction.
They're out of the game. What? What are you talking about? I love her.
So here's the thing. Natalie started in the top tier. After being voted out first, she fell into middle tier. But like I said, that normalizing effect, it's a lot easier to bounce back to where you were than it is to rise from a previous starting point. And so she's actually going to get a big bounce right back up into the top tier.
I don't think your stock can go up while you're on Edge of Extinction. She's doing amazing. If like the fact that her stock... that's wild. I can't get behind that one.
I mean, I think she's getting good content there. And I think that a lot of people are saying, you know what? She shouldn't really be blamed too much for being first out. It was kind of like a random bullet that hit her. And now she's killing it on Extinction. So she deserves to be back up there. I will say she barely managed to make it up into that top spot, but she did jump quite a few people to get there.
Okay.
All right. So
I just have there's a feeling inside of me that, you know, I see people like that are in the game that are falling, and then Natalie to get a boost is okay.
Yeah. All right. So after Natalie, we are going to see Ethan had previously cracked the top tier. He was in the middle tier, got up to the top tier over the last couple episodes, but we are going to see him.
When you get voted out, your stock drops when you get voted out.
Only a couple of spots. He falls down into the middle tier. I don't think people are blaming him a ton for this vote out. It was pretty random in terms of like, you know, just it happened to be Ethan. I don't think there was a ton that he could have done about it, but he does lose the gains, the ground he was making going up. He's going to fall back to about where he started here after being voted out.
Makes sense. Yeah. So we got a couple of potentially, I don't even want to say this, but purple edits. What's going to happen to Wendell here?
Very interesting. I really want to talk about Wendell, actually. Wendell started in the top tier.
Really? Okay.
Has fallen to the middle tier. He stays in the middle tier here. We haven't really seen anything negative about Wendell. I don't think there's a reason that we're seeing him fall like that's negative content. I think it's just that he's not making much of an impact on the season so far. And so, you know, with everybody else moving around, having an impact, he's falling a little bit by a little bit.
He's getting forgotten a little bit absence of the mind.
Yeah. And it makes me very curious about the future for Wendell here. And I want to preface this by saying I am a 100% jumping the gun, and that this is not a guarantee by any means. But if Wendell continues with this, we haven't seen much from him. Maybe he really doesn't make much of an impact on the season. Maybe he just kind of has a quiet boot episode, and he ends up going out. He, I think, has a big reputation from Ghost Island. He had played a pretty dominant game with Dominic, but Wendell versus Dominic, the only tie to ever happen in Survivor history in the final tribal. I'm very curious about this idea of when there's a pair that played really closely together and they both did really, really well, who gets the credit? I think Wendell got a lot of the credit because he did get that tiebreaker. But if anybody has a right to say, hey, I deserve a big chunk of that credit, we tied in the final tribal vote, I think it's Dominic. So I do wonder how Wendell's legacy will impact Dominic's moving forward. I think the closest sort of comparison we can make here is JT and Steven back on Token Chains, where JT legendary status after that season. He was considered one of the best winners. He won unanimously. People gave up their own games for his benefit. Then he goes on Heroes Villains, and as you mentioned earlier, gives away an idol to Russell. Then at that point, people are like, okay, that was bad. But, you know, you can sort of see what he was doing there. Maybe this is not the worst. Then he goes on Game Changers and does not find much success there either. Pretty big gaffe there as well. And I think at this point, his legacy has been pretty tarnished. I think definitely isn't considered a legend anymore. Maybe not even top tier. I don't know.
Yeah. Maybe even lower. I mean, there's no one's stock who's gone so far up and then so far down as JT. And interesting to that. So people said, oh, Steven, it's like, exactly. Oh my God, Steven was a super important key to his success. And then people wondered into this season, like Jeremy worked with Steven, Jeremy won. How can Jeremy do without Steven? And so far he's doing pretty good, but it would have been, you know, Steven seems to be an amazing ally to work with.
Yeah. Well, what started to happen was as JT's stock fell, people started to go, you know what? Maybe Steven really was the brains behind that operation. Maybe it was Steven that made that happen. Then we see Steven on Second Chance, and I think he did fine. But I think even he would say that he wished that he had done better. Obviously didn't win or anything. And so I think that what we ended up seeing is that that individually they did not find the success that they had as a duo, and that the sum of their parts was great. Was greater than the individuals. And so I wonder if that's the case with Wendell and Dominic, if Wendell continues this track. And again, completely jumping the gun, Wendell could absolutely do really, really well in the future and completely put this to bed. But I'm really interested to see what this does for Dominic, what this does for the idea of Dominic and Wendell together, because I do think there are players who are just a little bit incomplete. And if they find the right match and they really glue themselves together, really exceed the sum of their parts.
For sure. Yeah, that's very, very well said. Sometimes you need somebody to fill in a role that you can't do. And maybe it's early, though. You are jumping the gun. We can't really give a sentence here to Wendell just yet. You
absolutely.
Know, he's on the majority
pure
tribe.
Speculation right
yeah,
now.
Yeah. Yeah. So we'll see if he it makes sense that he stays in the middle tier to me.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Oh, so, Adam.
After Wendell, Adam is falling a bit here.
We're gonna see a drop.
Adam was here. Adam had been steadily climbing the middle tier for a little while,
as he should. His first episode was awesome. He got the target off his back. He was doing great, but this one's gonna take a hit to his
top. I was ready for Adam to crack top tier. I thought this is the trajectory, but this definitely is a hit for Adam. He is going to fall even below Ethan here. It's not good for Adam as he falls still in the middle tier, not to bottom tier. But
he's never been voted out. He won the game. He hasn't been voted out. He's still in. His torch has never been snuffed. Mm-hmm. So I see you, social media people. Relax a little bit with the Adam. I see the hate that he's getting. Y'all need to chill. The kid won the Survivor. Okay. He's at it's a very high level season. He's out there making plays. Treat him with kindness, please. I see some nasty tweets and it's upsetting.
All right. So Denise is going to move up into the second spot here in the middle tier, just below Wendell. Not actually moving up very much, but just due to the nature of everybody else moving down, she is sort of benefiting from that.
Small bump. Yeah, she's got an idol. She's in a majority. They keep losing. Win a tribal immunity, Denise. Come on. Find. I see you doing CrossFit. Let's win some tribal immunities here.
All right. Well, after we had Denise, we had Ethan. And then after Ethan, we're finally going to get somebody moving up from the bottom tier. This should not be super surprising. Michelle. Yes. Who started in the bottom tier, has always been at the top of the bottom tier, is moving up into the middle tier just behind Ethan. Big bump for Michelle. She is on her way up. She talked about wanting to prove herself. And I think that we're seeing the results of that right here. She is moving up. And if she continues this, I could easily see her continuing to move up.
Yep. She got bamboozled in episode one. She got bamboozled, but she's regained her footing. She's in a power place with Jeremy. I think Jeremy's driving the bus a little bit in terms of that duo. But Michelle had a great episode. She's very deserving of the middle tier here for sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. right. So after Michelle is Adam, and then after Adam is Nick, who is still very low in the middle tier, actually, which is very slowly falling. He's actually getting kind of close to the bottom tier. Just we've seen nothing of him. And that's that does not bode well for your legacy, it seems.
Nope. The fans like the content. So Nick, I feel like Nick's a little underrated being at the bottom of the middle tier. I could see him more beside Michelle, beside the Denise, but it's a harsh judgment of Nick, but I can live with it.
Yeah. And I think again, it's mostly just like he's unproven at this point. Like he won his season in a decent win there. It was actually, I think, a pretty good win. But when we're seeing a lot of stuff from other people and we're not seeing anything from Nick, I think that's where it comes from. I don't know if it's, I don't know if he deserves to be falling in the same way that I don't know if Wendell deserves to be falling, but it does seem like we're seeing that not getting mentioned in the edit, not getting many confessionals, does seem to impact you negatively, whether you deserve it or not.
For sure, as it should. I think so. And then we're left with three.
The bottom three here. We've got Ben, Amber, and Danny. They are not moving here. They're going to stay in this order.
Wait. Ben is going to stay in the bottom tier.
Here's the harsh thing. Ben started at the very bottom by a large margin.
Yeah, he's moving up.
He has moved up. He has surpassed both Danny and Amber, and he actually had one of the bigger, not one of the bigger, but he is still moving up. So, you know, he's moved up almost a tenth of a point here within the bottom tier. He is actually he's getting there. He needs a good episode. If he has a good episode, I think he has a chance to move up to middle tier.
I understand, but I would buy Ben's stock, him being where I think he's underrated from what he's been doing. But I do get it. People are salty. People hate the fire making challenge. I get it. But there's a couple harsh judgments. Like for Ben to be four spots behind Ethan, who just got voted out, it's like, really? But it's all right.
Yeah, I mean, this is the audience. They have
harsh, the audience harsh is judgment. Almost correct. Some of them are definitely wrong. Some of them are wrong. They're pretty on it, but not 100% yet.
Mm-hmm. I actually agree with you. I think Ben is in for a deep run here.
I think so. We're going to get a lot of Ben, which, hey, I can live with for sure. Ben is, it'll be interesting to when we potentially get to a final seven or a final six, are people going to look at Ben as a final zero vote finalist or, sorry, I got my brothers call me, or does Ben actually have a chance to win this game? I think he does have a chance. It's unlikely, but he's live. He is live win equity for sure.
Yeah, I feel like I think he has a deep run. I don't know if he has a chance to win. I don't know if he has the respect of his peers right now.
You're right. It would be tough for him to get the final. He just doesn't have the eloquency that some of these other players do. He has some charisma, but is you know, when Denise talks, when Parvati talks, when Boston Rob, it's magic. They're just like it's almost undescribable. Ben isn't quite as well spoken, and he had a bad final tribal in his Heroes versus Hustlers, right? He barely got that win, I remember, over Chrissy. So I would buy Ben being where he is, though. I think his stock is undervalued.
Yeah, I agree. Any others that you really disagree with that you haven't mentioned?
I think Nick's a little underrated. I think Ben is a little underrated in terms of overrated. I think Natalie being in the top tier, being on the edge of extinction, is insane. That's pretty wild. That's crazy to me. That one doesn't sit well. But it's pretty close here. I can get behind most of this.
I'm very curious, being a winner yourself, can you get into the heads of these people playing on this season? Like if you had an all winner season of Big Brother Canada, and you were willing to play, is this in your head? Like, do you think that this is a major component of the strategy of like, what is my legacy if I do something wrong here?
Legacy is definitely important, but for these guys are all winners. The goal of the show is to win. These guys are playing with house money. Yes, we can rank them. Yes, some winners are, but you won the show. You accomplished the goal. I think you can really come into this season and play loose. Have fun with it. Have that lightheartedness. In my second time playing on Big Brother Canada, and this is one thing I regret, is it was heavy for me, dude. I didn't have a lot of fun. It was, you know, I failed my first season and I got a second chance, and it was a do or die mentality. I like tried to will that into existence. I wish I lightened up. I wish I had more fun, had a jovial spirit to me. And I think someone like Tony, who's coming into this saying like, hey, he's playing loose, he's playing fantastic, he's playing awesome. Someone who's coming in like a little tight, little too serious, maybe Adam potentially there. I know this is a big season, but whether you get voted out first like Natalie or whether you go on and win, these people have accomplished the survivor dream. They won the game. So there is legacies on the line, but it's not as intense as I think people are making it out to be. Like Rob's a legend. Rob's a legend no matter what happens. He could be the first boot. He could win again. He's a legend. You know, to take a quote from my friend JP, Jordan Pardhar, everyone who plays Survivor would love to be at the bottom of this tier list because this is these are the winners.
I agree with you with Rob, but I do think we are seeing some very cautious gameplay from a lot of these winners. I think there's a really big carrot being dangled in front of them. Not only is it $2 million, which is a lot of $1 million. And for people who already won the $1 million, like it's a lot more real to them. I think like you play Survivor, you're like $1 million. Great. I also want to have the title though. But once you win the $1 million, you're like, oh, this is actually pretty good. Right?
Of course. Yeah. The money is, it's the money. I won 100,000 and I got like a taste. I'm like, oh shit. That's like,
right.
Like crack cocaine. If of you course. Had winning money on reality television shows, like sign me the fuck up. Excuse me.
If you had $2 million dangling in front of you.
Oh.
And not only that, but if you win this season, you will probably be widely regarded for the rest of the, of Survivor history as either the best player of all time or close to it.
This is the highest stakes there have ever been. But from poker terminology, you gotta play your game. You gotta play your game regardless of what kind of stakes you're playing. If you're playing a low stake tournament or a high stake tournament, the game doesn't change, you know, and coming in with a jovial loose attitude is will allow you to make those moves accordingly. You know, you gotta bring that lightness. These people are starving. They're on an island. It is a beautiful, but it's also a miserable experience at times. Being around that negativity will suck you dry. And that's when someone like Tyson has had success in past seasons is he makes people laugh. He makes people have fun. That's a very underrated part of this game. So, man, I like this tier list. We'll have to see where this develops. I'd say Natalie a little overrated. It's pretty bang on. The fans have got it dialed in, I think.
All right. Well, that's about what we have. If you want to contribute to the tier list, you can find the survey on my Twitter at Armstrong Taren. I will be releasing the survey after the next episode of Survivor finishes on the East Coast. So around 9 p.m. Eastern next Thursday, you'll be able to take the next survey. You can also still vote in this one if you want. Like I said, I will update if anything changes over the course of the week as you've had more time to develop those thoughts, or if you just missed it earlier, but I do encourage you to get the thoughts in before the podcast so that we can actually discuss those things as they happen. So make sure you check that out. Kevin, what are you up to? Where can people find you?
Dude, just on Twitter at Kevin Rob Martin, at Kevin Rob Martin on Instagram. I post some stuff, but I'm chilling, man. Life is good. I got some projects happening behind the scenes, which is really exciting. And I'm just loving life. I am in a good place in life. I'm happy. I'm content. And Peely, my girlfriend, says hi. She's doing awesome. And thank you for allowing me to talk about this beautiful game of Survivor with you. This has been a lot of fun. And I will be very interested in how this season plays out.
Yeah. Thank you for coming on. You were always a wonderful guest. Great to talk to. So I'm really glad you took some time out to talk to us here.
Thank you, man. This has been fun. Thank you to the everyone in chat. You guys are awesome. Okay. Everyone be okay. And let's hopefully have a positive social media experience this season. I know this is intense. There's a lot of favorites. But these are humans. So I like to throw that out because sometimes we can get caught up. So let's keep some positivity on the internet for these Survivor players.
Yes. And if you are a Survivor fan, maybe you haven't checked out Big Brother, or maybe you haven't checked out Big Brother Canada.
If you want to, don't go to other. Just kidding. No. No, no, dude.
Well, if you liked Kevin on this podcast, he is a great example of Big Brother Canada and their fantastic casting. Have a season coming up soon. Big Brother Canada 8 is going to start next week. They just dropped the cast on Wednesday. And I got to say, looks like a great cast. Very excited.
Big Brother casting does good stuff. Good stuff. Sometimes the seasons, like, you know, season 7 was a little bit boring, but sometimes the seasons don't always play out, but the cast is amazing.
They yeah, really you may job. Have heard bad things about Big Brother US casting. That is not the case for Big Brother Canada casting. Big Brother Canada casts are some of the best in the business. They produce some really great players and characters. So check it out. We are going to do a cast preview draft podcast on Monday night for Big Brother Canada 8, if you want to check that out.
Ooh, that's fun.
Yes. Like I said, next Wednesday is going to be the premiere of Big Brother Canada 8. So make sure you check that out. Make sure you stay tuned for all the other Survivor coverage heading your way. And thanks so much for joining us. See you
next time. Everyone for watching. Bye-bye.
Yeah, Taryn's back to give you deeds again. He's digging deep on Survivor to find you everything you need. So if your life is packed, let Taryn and his friends break down the episode beyond what the casual sees.